From NPR and the Futuro Media Group, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. A six-year-old class action lawsuit is over. The case involved raids by Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents who, without warrants, forced their way into the homes of Latino families.
This was running roughshod over the Constitution, and we were able to establish for the first time that these ICE agents doing home raids must apply the same norms as any other law enforcement in the United States.
A federal judge ordered the government to pay $1 million in damages. And on the eve of historic immigration legislation, what two leading Latino Congress members had to say.
People have very high expectations. Don't give us any place to hide. Don't give us an excuse that we can get behind. The Congress has to get this done now.
Congressman Luis Gutierrez and Javier Becerra. All this and more coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Quédense con nosotros. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. In Washington, still a lot of hedging in terms of a final immigration reform bill. But across the country, Latinos, especially young people, have stepped up their own small forms of protest, like this group of students from Cornell University who refused to answer questions about their immigration status while approaching security at Brownsville Airport.
I want to get this gentleman's badge number.
Okay. Can you put your phone on?
Excuse me, what's going on?
You committed a breach of peace?
What did I do?
Disorderly conduct?
What is my crime? I have not committed any crime.
Brownsville, Texas is within the 100-mile range from the border that allows immigration agents to approach anyone suspected of being in the country without proper documentation. The most common way, by asking them if they're U.S. citizens. But not many people know that it is their right to not answer that question. Instead, U.S. citizens Omar Figueredo and Nancy Morales began filming their encounter with their phones.
What is the crime?
They were arrested by the Brownsville police, who stepped in and now face charges including failure to identify, obstructing a passageway, resisting arrest, and interference of public duties. They were released after 7 hours. They're not the only ones who are protesting, though, against unwarranted actions by immigration agents. A recent ruling by a federal district court judge led the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency to change its national policies on how immigration officers carry out raids. The charges were part of a six-year-long class action suit against ICE that found officers had forced their way into the homes of Latino families in New York without warrants or even legal justification. So what does this case and others like it mean for the immigration reform legislation now being drafted by Congress? We're joined by Juan Cartagena. He's the president and general counsel of Latino Justice, PRALDEF, based in New York City. Latino Justice was the lead counsel in that class action lawsuit. Welcome back to Latino USA, Juan.
Oh, thank you, Maria.
Your lawsuit basically looks at what happens when immigration agents go to people's homes in the process of a raid. So give us a little bit of the background on the class action lawsuit and what was the issue at hand?
The waning years of the Bush administration saw an increase, a significant increase in home raids, in large part because ICE agents were being told to increase your productivity, increase the number of arrests, actually increase your quotas. So the operation was called Operation Return to Sender. ICE agents in 2007 were told by 800% increase the number of people that you bring in. Now, they are supposed to be looking for individuals at these homes, but once they were there, they were also allowed to pick up what are called collaterals. Live people who are also picked up for suspected immigration violations.
So the issue, Juan, is that these agents would show up at 6 o'clock in the morning. They'd oftentimes be wearing outfits that don't even identify them as ICE agents. They'd be banging on the doors, and then they would make it appear as if they have a warrant to come in.
Correct. Or come up with reasons to actually come in into your building. One of our families was actually told, listen, somebody's dying upstairs. We have to get into the building now. And next thing you know, they're inside arresting people. One of our families, the suspect, the alleged person they were looking for, was apparently 22 years old, but they were looking for that person based on a photograph when he was 7 years old. This was running roughshod over the Constitution. And we were able to establish for the first time that these ICE agents during home raids must apply the same norms as any other law enforcement official in the United States, and that these constitutional protections also apply to this category of people.
So, Juan, the judge ruled that immigration agents can no longer invade people's homes without a reasonable, articulable suspicion of danger, that they now have to ask for consent if they have no warrant. So what does this really mean in terms of accountability and the agents on the ground?
Well, first of all, the order that we got signed by the judge last week is nationwide. In 60 days, ICE will actually issue new memoranda and conduct training of all their agents on these new criteria. One issue that you read off the order is also that when you ask for consent, it should be in a language that's understood by the recipient who's giving you consent. And especially when ICE knows that they're looking for a Spanish-speaking undocumented person.
The rulings that you just got are happening at a time when immigration reform is on the table. In the conversation around immigration reform, the number of deportations is, in fact, not being negotiated at all.
One of the things we have to always be vigilant about is that the current conversation is being done in a spirit of compromise. The gang of eight is supposed to be bipartisan. They're already making concessions even before they negotiate with the House. And we know how extremist the House is going to be on this issue. Our biggest concern is that enforcement is not being addressed, even though the Obama administration has record numbers of deportations, has spent untold of millions on Border Patrol. In many ways, Maria, the case that we just finished settling, Aguilar versus ICE, reminds the country of the worst parts of the immigration enforcement schemata. Comprehensive immigration reform should be discussing enforcement. It should be discussing deportations. We've seen the early parts of this discussion in which some of the conservative forces in the Senate were saying, before we get to that pathway to citizenship, I want to make sure the border is more secure than it is now. So we see enforcement being discussed by the right, but it has to be pushed by the left in order to ensure that we have some kind of sane way of dealing with the issue. Deportation should be reserved only for those individuals convicted of violent crimes. Remember, the due process guarantees of individuals get caught up in the deportation system are still not completely fixed.
Do you think that there's engagement? Are you satisfied with what's going on as immigration reform is being discussed?
I'm satisfied that in many ways, the protests that occurred many, many years ago, that led to the point that we are now. We are finally talking about immigration reform because of the protests and because of the vote that we had in November. What's leading the push here is the vote that's going to happen in the midterms. If this doesn't get fixed, hell to pay come midterm elections. So I am satisfied in that regard that we've got the combination of protests and voting behavior activity that allowed us to be at this point.
Juan Cartagena, thank you so much for joining us on Latino USA.
Thank you, Maria.
Juan Cartagena is the president and general counsel of Latino Justice, PRALDEF, based in New York City. With immigration reform in the headlines, we've heard most about the Senate's plan, where we've seen signs of bipartisanship from the so-called Gang of Eight. And we're seeing a similar effort from the House. Republican Representatives Raul Labrador of Idaho and Mario Diaz-Balart of Florida have emerged as key voices in shaping the House proposal and pushing it forward in a deeply divided Congress. To check in on the latest in Washington, we spoke with two House members who have a long history of involvement in immigration issues, Congressman Luis Gutierrez from Illinois and Congressman Javier Becerra from California. We're joined now by Congressman Luis Gutierrez, who's speaking to us from his office on Capitol Hill. Congressman, welcome to Latino USA.
Pleasure to be with you once again.
There were significant rallies across the country this week in support of immigration reform. You were in Washington during all of this, but what's your sense on the mobilizing and lobbying around immigration this time around, Congressman?
People have very high expectations. And as I said, don't give us any place to hide. Don't give us an excuse that we can get behind. There are no excuses. The Congress has to get this done now. People voted. There's a very clear mandate. There's bipartisan support for the issue in both the Senate and the House. Don't give us any quarter on this thing. You know, keep moving us forward because nothing happens in Washington, D.C. unless there's a consistent and persistent demand from outside Washington.
So finally, Congressman, you've been a part of this process before, a lot of ups and downs. Based on your experience, what's going to make the difference this time around?
What's going to make the difference this time around is that you have Raul Labrador from Idaho, a Tea Party favorite, but a lawyer who is coming to this, obviously, I believe, from a national security perspective, but also with a kind and open heart to the needs of immigrant families. You know, Mario Diaz-Balart, I can't say enough about how he's working tirelessly. The moment we pass comprehensive immigration reform, there will be relief in terms of the deportation, because the first thing we're going to do is putting 11 million people in a safe place so that they're not deported. They can get a work permit. They can get right with the law. I tell you something. You could go to that crowd yesterday and ask anybody who's undocumented about giving up their fingerprints, and they say where, and about paying a fine, and they say, who do I write the check out to? And where do I enroll for these English classes? They can sign up for those English classes. There's absolutely no excuse. The American public is behind the framework of legislation that I believe we will be introducing in the coming weeks.
Congressman Luis Gutierrez, thank you so much for joining us on Latino USA.
Thank you.
Congressman Luis Gutierrez spoke to us from his office in Washington, D.C. And we go now to Congressman Becerra, who joins us from his office at the Capitol. Welcome back to Latino USA, Congressman.
Maria, always good to be with you.
Congressman, the critique is that this is going to be immigration reform light, that in many ways it may not go deep enough, that the deportations that led to all of the essentially street outrage in terms of many Latinos will continue, and maybe the numbers could even increase, even with comprehensive immigration reform.
Immigration light, or a piecemeal approach to solving our broken immigration system, is a prescription not just for disaster, but for further undocumented immigration in the future. And quite honestly, it will lead, as you just said, to a lot of anger and anxiety in immigrant communities, in the Latino community, and a real belief that there were politicians who were unable to catch up with the rest of the public and get this done.
So the Senate's version of the bill has gotten most of the media attention, but we're waiting to see a proposal from the House. What is the latest on the House proposal, and what do you think are going to be the biggest stumbling blocks in terms of the House?
I believe that the proposals that will surface from both are going to be very similar. And I would say that while the House has been working this far longer, the Senate has been more public about its negotiations. The House, it's a little bit more difficult. We have a lot of Republican colleagues who have been on the opposite side of this issue for the longest time. Remember, just a year ago, even less than a year ago, we were hearing a lot of talk about self-deportation, about vetoing the DREAM Act. And so it's a big difference between what we're hearing now from Republicans and what we heard last year. But we have a lot of thoughtful conversation going on bipartisanly, and that bodes well for any opportunity to get a bill quickly to the president's desk.
Thank you so much for joining us on Latino USA, Congressman.
Thank you, Maria.
That was Congressman Javier Becerra of California. Coming up on Latino USA, playwright Kiara Alegría Hudis completes the cycle of plays that she based on her cousin Elliot, the veteran.
The inspiration was that my cousin had returned from Iraq and had an injury. He was a real clown kind of character, real sweetheart. And he still had all of those elements to him, but I did see that something had changed in his eyes.
That's coming up. No se vayan. Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. When Kiara Alegría Juris won the Pulitzer Prize in 2012 for her play Water by the Spoonful, her name was unfamiliar to many theater buffs. But she was far from an unknown. Latinos and other audiences had been captivated by the book she wrote for the popular Tony Award-winning Broadway musical In the Heights, about Latino families and displacement in New York's Washington Heights neighborhood.
Sonny, you're late.
Chillax. You know you love me.
Me and my cousin running, just another dime a dozen. Mom and pop stopping shop. And oh my God, it's gotten dude on hot. Like my man Cole Porter said, people come.
Another play, Water by the Spoonful, is the second in a trilogy about a man named Elliot, a Puerto Rican war veteran. It had a successful run off-Broadway at the start of this year.
Both of you both know I run out of minutes all the time, and no one could be bothered to drive by and tell me to my face.
Because you always bothered to drive by and say hello to Mommy Jenny when you knew she was sick? Because you bothered to hit me up one time this week and say, Elliot, I'm sorry your mom died?
Now, the final play in that trilogy, The Happiest Song Plays Last, opens in Chicago on April 13th. Kiara Alegría Juris joins us from rehearsals at the Goodman Theater in Chicago. Welcome to Latino USA, Kiara.
This is great. I'm having a good time already.
Tell us about Elliot, the protagonist of all of the plays in your trilogy. He's based actually on your real life cousin. So who is he and what is his world like?
This is a coming-of-age story that happens in three parts, and it is based on my cousin, Elliot, who, right out of high school, enlisted in the Marines. And the plays take the inspiration of his real-life story and create a fictional story about an injury he receives while in Iraq and how he puts the pieces of his life back together.
So you actually say that when you saw your cousin and you started looking around your Philadelphia community, you started seeing a lot of young men, a lot of Latino men, a lot of young Puerto Rican men, you know, coming back wearing fatigues. And you just said, there's a story here. There's something happening here. So what were you seeing?
I think what I was seeing is a generation of young people who were ambitious, but were stuck in a neighborhood in Philadelphia that didn't offer them a lot of options. And so educationally, they were behind the curve, but they want to make something of themselves. And all of a sudden, with a war being declared, you know, these soldiers get paid twice as much on active duty in wartime. And this becomes a way to take pride in what they're doing with their lives, a way to have kind of a professional career, a way to get income and help their families out.
Did you realize at that moment that it was like, this is going to be a trilogy? It's not enough to do it in one play. I have to do it in three?
No, I had no idea. When I first wrote about it, the inspiration was that my cousin had returned from Iraq and had an injury. And I went to greet him on base in California. And, you know, I saw he was a real clown kind of character, real sweet, sweetheart, very charming. And he still had all of those elements to him. But I did see that something had changed in his eyes. And so I thought, OK, I'm going to write a play dealing with this. And to me, then it was just one play. Of course, that was naive. And what I didn't realize was that, you know, this war and his experience would not just affect him and our family for one play's worth of material, but actually has ripple effects that last for decades.
Your play really talks a lot about kind of disconnected family members, a lot of disillusionment. The notion of Latino family is that we're together, we love each other, we have this family bond that, you know, everybody talks about familia in the Latino community. And you're saying, look, Latino families have got issues, a lot of issues.
Well, for one thing, what I feel strongly of after writing these three plays is that the Latino family is the American family. And so a lot of their trials and a lot of their triumphs are culturally specific, but they're also universal to American families in general.
Kiara?
Mm-hmm.
What does it feel like to win a Pulitzer?
Well, it feels great. I will say that. It's very helpful in terms of getting my work out there. Of course, prize or no prize doesn't mean anything about the actual quality and content of the writing. So every day I'd sit at my desk like I've never written a page before, and I try to connect every day as a writer and not just coast on, oh, someone said I did something good.
So your play, Water by the Spoonful, was only the second play to win a Pulitzer Prize without being staged in the capital of the theater world, New York City. The only other play that this has happened with was Anna of the Tropics, also by a Latino playwright, Nilo Cruz. So do you think that this is a coincidence, or does this tell us something about what kind of attention is paid to Latino plays by the mainstream theater world, and what kind of attention is paid to it by the New York theater world?
You know, Nilo's play, Anna in the Tropics, was done in Florida at the New Theater. And that community has a strong Cuban community and a strong Cuban audience. For me, you know, Hartford Stage Company, which premiered Water by the Spoonful, they have a historically Puerto Rican community. So maybe it is that these theater companies have been a little more forward in terms of their willingness to produce Latino plays, where there might be more of a disconnect in New York. Before Water by the Spoonful opened in New York, I was very, very nervous, and I emailed Nilo and I said, look, I'm embarrassed. You don't really know me, but can I take you out to dinner? And can we just talk about what this bizarre experience is that we've both had? And we, you know, we both got some greasy hamburgers, and he said, don't sweat it, you know, just relax and have faith in your writing. And it was wonderful to connect with him about that issue.
Wow. Kiara, what comes next? What's your dreamo vision of the next big project for you?
What's next for me is more plays, more stories to tell. The next story is about a corner bar in North Philly, where over the course of 20 years, and what happens to the regular people who go there and drink. And, you know, so that's the joy for me. And the fact that the Pulitzer Prize kind of afforded me another year or two just to sit and write all the time is a luxury. I love it.
Kiara, thank you so much for speaking with us on Latino USA.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Kiara Alegría Juris at the Goodman Theater in Chicago won the Pulitzer Prize in 2012 for her play Water by the Spoonful. And for this week, that's Latino USA. You can find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter, where we are Latino USA, all one word, to let us know what you think about our program. It's produced by Carolina Gonzalez, Deborah George, Andres Caballero, Lita Hartman, Michael Simon Johnson, Michael Jones, and Marlon Bishop. Latino USA is produced by The Futuro Media Group in Harlem. The program was founded at the University of Texas at Austin. I'm executive producer Maria Hinojosa. Join me again next week for another edition of NPR's Latino USA.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation and by the Marguerite Casey Foundation, dedicated to achieving a more just and equitable society for all, and the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide. Support for NPR comes from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at gatesfoundation.org, and Lumber Liquidators, offering a variety of sustainably harvested flooring, including pre-finished and stained, at 1-800-HARDWOOD, and the Cy Sims Foundation, supporter of the Cy Sims School of Business and Executive MBA program at Yeshiva University. This is NPR.